Adiós. Adiós.
Material entanglement.
There are three levels, or there are two levels of material entanglement: gross material entanglement and subtle material entanglement. Where there are three levels of existence, you can say: material, gross material, subtle material, and spiritual. In Bhagavad Gita, you're all familiar with Bhagavad Gita, just a little bit? Yeah? You've heard the name. You haven't seen the movie. Okay. Did we bring copies? Kuber, G? There's a Bhagavad Gita not too far away from us. The Bhagavad Gita gives the philosophical side of yoga. The 700 verses only in Sanskrit. And giving the essence of the philosophy of the Vedas, the Upanishads. Or you could say from another point of view, the essence of spiritual understanding. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said, Indriyani param yahu indriyebhya param manaha manasasu padabhutir yoputte paratastusa. This gives a kind of a hierarchy. At the bottom of the hierarchy are the things that we perceive with our senses. We perceive light with our eyes, or forms we see with our eyes. We perceive sounds with our ears, objects of touch with our skin. Eyes, ears, we smell things with our nose. Eyes, ears, nose, we taste things with our tongue. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch. And there's Bhagavad Gita.
Okay. We will keep that right there.
Right here, yeah, the microphone stand, listen to it.
So there are these things that we perceive with the senses. And because the senses are perceiving them, the senses are higher than these things. And indriyani param yahu indriyebhya param manaha. But higher than our senses is the mind. Because the mind is the center into which all the perceptions of the senses flow. You see something, but what you see finally comes to the mind. And in the mind, you start to process that. You see, whatever it is. They create some impression on the mind. The senses themselves, like the tongue, doesn't really do anything on its own. The tongue takes the information and sends it to the mind. So it goes to the mind. So the mind is like the center for all the senses. But the mind just really has two functions, called sankalpa and vikalpa. Sankalpa means accepting. And vikalpa means rejecting. We accept something and we reject something. And the mind does that. The mind accepts something, the mind rejects something. But the mind is very fickle. The mind's not a very fixed character. It's flip-floppy. We might say that it's flaky, but it flips and flops. So you're walking down the street, you see something,
in a store window. Well, it could be an iPad or a dress or it could be anything. And the eyes see it, the senses, the eyes see it. And then it goes to the mind. And then the mind says, wow, I'd love to have that. And then the next moment the mind says, nah, I don't really need it. And then the mind says, but it's really nice. And the mind says, but I'll get a better one. And then the mind says, but no, it's good. And the mind goes back and forth, I like it. No, that's the nature of the mind. So we can flip-flop a bit. As long as we're on the platform, on that platform, we call that the mental platform. And we know people who spend a lot of their time on the mental platform, right? You meet people, their whole life is, well, should we go? No, I don't think we should go. But maybe we should go. But no, I don't think so. Well, decide for me. Well, maybe it's better if you don't decide. I should decide for myself because other people make too many decisions for me. But maybe, well, why don't you decide? And they go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Bung, 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 bung. It's like ping pong. When it's extreme, we say that they're nuts. And when it's mild, we say they're something. Indecisive. But this is the mental platform. The data is coming in from the senses to the mind. And the mind is going back and forth. But there has to be something above the mind. And there is. That's the intelligence. Now, of course, we don't see any of these things. No one can take your mind and put it under a microscope and make a slide. But we know that the mind is there by its symptoms, by its actions. And above the mind is the intelligence, which we also don't see. But nobody will say, well, unless you can show me intelligence, I want to see it. Otherwise, I don't believe it exists. I mean, I want to see it right in front of me. Otherwise, I don't believe in your superstitious intelligence. Everyone will say, even the grossest materialist will accept that he at least has intelligence. But what is the sign, what are the functions of the intelligence? The main function of the intelligence is analysis. Consideration of something. Let's say it's, I don't know, what was it that we saw this in the store window? Maybe it was it a dress or an iPod? iPad, it wouldn't be an iPod anymore, that's old. Okay, it's a new iPad. And you look at it and you say, wow, I'd like to have it. But yeah, maybe, but no. And so on the mental platform. Then the intelligence looks at it and says, well, listen, you already have a computer and it does everything that you want it to do. And besides, this costs $500 and you only have three. And you already have a $400 debt on your credit card. And it costs you, what, 22% interest, 25% interest? And you're in enough trouble as it is. And besides, all these other competing companies are now coming out with something almost as good, or Apple's going to come out with something. They're just on the verge of coming out with a new one, so it would be better to wait until A, you can get the new model, and B, you have money to pay for it. So, forget it. Or, oppositely, it says you've got the money in your pocket, it would help you so much, it's a great thing. Okay. But the intelligence doesn't flip-flop. The intelligence analyzes. What are the pros? What are the cons? What is it from this angle? What is it from that angle? And when your intelligence is done the job, okay, we have a decision here. And that decision can stick, because the intelligence is not fickle. The intelligence analyzes and makes a decision on the basis of analysis.
doubt is a function of intelligence, also intelligence. So, well, wait a second, how do we know? And then you have to give enough evidence. Hmm? The person has no doubt, he's not intelligence. Not intelligence. There has to be some sort of, well, wait a second, okay, maybe, but how do we know? Or it sounds good, but what's, is there a deeper story here? And then the intelligence, if it gets enough, because there's, on the one side, there's no doubt, the person has no capability of doubting, and then he's credulous, naive. You could sell him the Brooklyn Bridge, as they say. Or on the other side, he's all doubts, and there's nothing you can do. He'll doubt that he's doubting. Or he'll doubt that he doubts that he's doubting. You know, he's, everything is doubt. His whole life is doubt. He's hyper-doubtful. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for a person who has that kind of excessive doubting, there's no happiness. Can't do anything. Can't eat peach without doubting. Maybe it's poisoned, or maybe this, maybe that. So a little healthy doubt is a function of healthy intelligence. And analysis is a function of intelligence. So intelligence is higher than the mind. But then, intelligence is not the end of the line. We say, my intelligence. That means there's an I whose intelligence it is. So, who is that I? Yobhute paratastusa. The I is consciousness or the soul itself. Within the body is consciousness. We're able to do yoga stretches and breathing exercises and meditation and so many things because there's consciousness. When consciousness leaves the body, body doesn't stretch, the body gets stretched out. But it doesn't do anything on its own anymore because it's dead. The body minus consciousness is a dead body. So the body is beautiful as long as the soul is there, as long as the consciousness is there, as long as that conscious spark is within the body, then the people say, such a beautiful girl, such a handsome man. And when the consciousness leaves the body, we've killed them for less. When consciousness leaves the body, then no one's interested. No one wants it. No one wants to be near it. So the essential part within us is that conscious self. That's us. That's the actual self within the self, is that spark of consciousness. The strange thing about this world is that so many of us identify with what we're not. We identify with our intelligence, or we identify with our minds, where we identify ourselves with our physical bodies. And we don't realize our spiritual identity. And that creates every kind of problem. That's the basis for every kind of problem. First of all, because I'm operating on a mistaken assumption. I'm identifying with something that I'm not. And that's called illusion. If I think that I'm Napoleon, that's grand, but it's
false. So if I think that I'm, but someone, if someone thinks that he's American, or someone thinks that he's tall, or someone thinks that he's strong, or someone thinks that he's white, or someone thinks he's black, or someone thinks he's this, or something, then people think, yeah, way to go. You know, he's got real American spirit, or he's got black pride, or he's got white pride, or he's got whatever, pink pride. But what is that pride? It's pride and illusion. I'm identifying with what I'm not. And that's a mistake. What I'm identifying with is temporary. I won't always be American, or always be white, or always be black, or always be tall, always be strong, or always be any of these things. Because I'm not this body. The body came into existence a short while ago. It's here at the moment. And a short while from now, it'll be gone. But the conscious self within the body is always existing. It has no beginning, it has no end. You can't create it, you can't destroy it. It's permanently existing because its nature is entirely different. Matter comes and goes, and consciousness, spirit, always exists. But now I'm in an illusion, and I'm in difficulty, I'm in anxiety, because I'm identifying with something that I'm not. And I'm identifying with something which can't last. I'm building on a foundation which is power. Everything built on my American identity, or my white or black identity, or any of those other identities, is built on something that's going to be gone. Understanding that to become truly self-realized, we need to go above the senses, above the mind, and even above the intelligence, and come to the spiritual platform, which is the platform of peace, the platform of happiness, the platform of eternity. The real platform on which we're meant to exist. In its original context, the breathing exercises, sitting postures, and so on of yoga are meant to bring us to that realization. And of course, the rules of the original yoga discipline are very difficult, very demanding. In the present age, the kirtan will be very effective in bringing us to the spiritual platform. I was about to say bringing the mind to the spiritual platform, and that's right. The mind is a focal in yoga. It's the central point. If the mind is focused on matter, our life is focused on matter. And if the mind transcends matter, if the mind goes beyond matter, then our life goes beyond matter. So the purpose of chanting a mantra is to bring the mind beyond the material platform, beyond the mind, beyond intelligence, beyond body, to the platform of spirit.
the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra does that directly, because Krishna is transcendence in person. You're a person, I'm a person. And Krishna is the supreme person, or the ultimate person. You're a little speck of reality, I'm a little speck of reality. Our bodies are little specks of unreality because they're coming and going. But every one of us is a little speck of eternal existence. And when we speak of Krishna, he's the complete whole eternal existence. We can think of ourselves as little parts of Krishna. So when we chant Hare Krishna, the tiny part comes in touch with that ultimate whole. And therefore we're perfectly situated in our natural position, in harmony with the absolute, in harmony with Krishna. So the way it works is that the sound itself comes from the spiritual platform. It seems like an ordinary sound, like any other. But sound can come from the material world, or sound can come from the spiritual world, the spiritual platform. And this sound, Krishna, comes from that spiritual side. So when we chant Hare Krishna, the mind is uplifted. There's no difference between Krishna the sound and Krishna himself. Between Krishna the vibration and Krishna the absolute. So when we vibrate the mantra, as they were doing before, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, then the mind transcends the material platform. Even if we don't understand the language, even if we don't understand the meaning, even if we don't do a whole lot of intellectualizing about it, or if we do understand the meaning, we do understand the language, we do think about it, either way, the sound itself is so potent. The sound itself is of such a transcendental nature that just hearing the vibration brings us to a higher platform. Just chanting the vibration brings us to that spiritual platform. So this chanting of Hare Krishna is especially effective, especially in the present age, when everything is disturbed, everything. We're not in such a position that we can go to the Himalayas to practice yoga, where there'll be no one to disturb us, and the atmosphere will be pristine, tranquil. We're in Houston, which we want to talk about, where things are not as peaceful. But wherever we go, we can create that transcendental atmosphere within ourselves or within wherever we may be by this transcendental vibration. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And therefore, our spiritual teacher spread this chanting. And apart from writing so many books, he spread the chanting, and he used to say that you can read the books, and if you're interested in philosophy, you can take advantage of so much wisdom, or else simply take this chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the effect will be there. You'll experience it for yourself. It's not something like eating. Nobody has to give you a certificate. Yes, you eat. You'll know. Yes, I feel satisfied now. So take this chanting, Hare Krishna, free gift, and be happy.
you had time with the Prabhupada also. So what difference you see in the current level of devotees versus that time?
What level do I see in the current level? Difference do I see in the current
level? In the devotees and the Prabhupada.
It's all individual.
Yes.
The level of one's spiritual advancement is an individual matter. In the days of Prabhupada, the spiritual teacher, there were some who were beginners, neophytes. And there were some who were very advanced. And today, there are some who are neophytes. And there are some who are very advanced. The more one practices, the more one chants, the more one takes advantage of books that are like eight times of this, the more one becomes advanced. It's individual. Apart from that, people sort of start at different levels, don't they? Someone's naturally very, very interested in spiritual life, almost passionate about spiritual life, obsessed with spiritual, you know, I want to understand the truth. And somebody else is like, you know, I don't get it, what's the big deal? You know, what's the matter anyway? You know, it just doesn't register. It's not an issue. So, like, when's the football game? That's the issue. So, from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that that's on account of previous lifetimes. If a person has cultivated spirituality in previous lifetimes, it carries over to this lifetime. If it's been, say, 20% in the previous life, you start from 20%. If it was 80%, you start from 80%. Just automatically, when we come to attract it, it automatically revives. So, otherwise, why is some person, I don't know, I just want to know more about it. Like, it's like so interesting. And somebody else is like, if you see somebody coming who's chanting Hare Krishna, walks to the other side of the street. It's on account of previous cultivation. Krishna says that neha vikarnasho svipanchabhaya. Whatever one is accumulated, materially whatever you accumulate, at the end of your life is like that old account is leveled. And you have to start again in your next life. You're a college professor in this life, and the next life you start from. But spiritually, whatever you picked up in your previous life, whatever you cultivated, whatever progress you made, is yours to keep. So someone actually becomes more interested. So sometimes we see, therefore, the people who they've hardly even begun, and already they're advanced. So they just have to, and naturally they pick it up quickly, they become attracted, they follow the various practices, and they have a taste for it, because they're picking up from where they left off. And someone else, you know, is just sort of a beginner, he's, well, I don't know, and, you know, maybe I'll come, and maybe I won't, and maybe I'll, and he comes and he goes, and sometimes interested, and sometimes not interested. Because he didn't make that much progress previously. He doesn't have that much credit in the bank. But even the person with the least amount of credit can take advantage of this chanting of Hare Krishna and boost his balance right away. The chanting is so effective that one can very quickly make spiritual progress, because it cleanses the mind, it purifies the mind, it uplifts the mind. The mind is the center of yoga, the mind is the center of meditation. So when the mind becomes attracted to this transcendental vibration of Hare Krishna, very quickly one makes progress. So, again, there were people who were beginners, there were people who were advanced, and that's always going to be there. Is that okay? Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, I was recently referring some of information on the Bible, and Jesus Christ says, love God with thy heart, mind and soul. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, surrender to me completely. So how do we see these two scriptures, great scriptures, and how do we...
What's the problem?
Well, Krishna says to surrender.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ says, love God with the heart, mind and soul. Is it a similar thing there?
Not similar, same. If your father, someone says, love your father, and your father says, love me, what's the difference? Is there any difference? Same message, different book, different times and places and people and parts of the world.
Seeing that, you know, many, you know, generally people say that spirituality is kind of, you know, for the later stage, and
people say that spirituality is for a later stage.
When you grow, and when you grow older, or when you retire, you take up.
How come they don't say that about money?
Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, ask you this question, that, you know, how important it is for people, why they should take up or think about it. Or it's not different from the...
It's the same thing. If you say money, let's do it now.
Right.
And if it's spirituality, let's put it off till I'm in my rocking chair.
Yeah, that's what generally people think.
Because they don't know the value. They don't know the value. Otherwise, they'd invest now. It's like a person who could have bought Apple Computer when it cost $2 a share. If he'd known, but he didn't, and therefore no profit. Now they're busy investing in matter, but if they think about it, my investment's going to be wiped out. Right? Whatever materially I get, I'm going to lose. Either I lose it today, or I lose it tomorrow, or definitely at the time of death I lose it. So whatever my investment is that I want to do now, I'm going to lose. And I don't know when, but I'm going to lose it. And for that matter, even while I have it, it's not really going to satisfy me. If it's money, as long as I have it, it's useless. It's a funny sort of thing about money. People think the more you have, the better off you are. But as long as you have it, you can't. It's useless. It's sitting there. It's only when you lose it by spending it that it has any sort of a value for you. But people are misers. They want to hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it, and then they don't get anything. Or they spend it. But the things they spend it on don't make them happy. It's like a person with a car who's hungry and filling up his tank. Filling up his tank is not going to solve his hunger problem. He's investing in the body, but what about him? He's thinking that he's the body. Therefore, he's investing in the body and neglecting himself. So because he's an illusion that the body is the self, if you offer him something, we could make money, let's do it now. And we could make spiritual progress, let's do it when we're old. He doesn't even know if he's going to be old. There's no guarantee he'll reach that point. But he wants to put it off and put it off. And usually putting it off becomes such a habit by the time he's old, he'll continue to put it off, or he'll reach the dementia stage where he can't put it on. So Prahlad Maharaj was a 5-year-old boy who was telling his friends, let's do it now.
friends were saying, come on, we're kids, let's play. Let's run. I said, no, let's do it now. You don't know how much time you have. But we're trying to give people some understanding of these issues so that they'll see the value. That's it. John. Something else? I wonder what other kinds of questions there might be.
Maharaj, one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
We were reading about you a little bit.
You were reading about?
About you, Maharaj.
You were reading about me. Well, everyone makes mistakes.
So, how did you get, started, associated with the Prabhupada and all this movement at the age of 19, am I right?
Uh-huh.
How did you get with your family and your friends and in your society and all that stuff?
I just did it.
It
seems like it's all very complicated, but it's all very uncomplicated. Again, if there were an opportunity to make $3 million, you wouldn't worry too much about how your friends are going to feel if you're gone for a week or, you know, whatever all the delicate little intricacies are. You just go out there and get it. So if we're willing to make those sort of commitments, those sort of ventures for something which is temporary and unsatisfying ultimately, why should we hesitate to invest in our spiritual welfare? And even, it's a question of priorities. What's more important? How my friends feel about my not coming to the soccer game? Or my understanding of who I am and what my purpose of life is? It's just a question of making some simple decisions. Yes?
I've read how much intent offensively...
You have to speak double loud.
Okay. I have read that one should not chant offensively, the mind being fickle and all. This verse from a neophyte to ISKCON, how does one, chant the mind going everywhere?
It's practice. The chanting is repeated so that the mind will have the repeated opportunity to come to the right place. Krishna says, yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam asthiram tatastato niyamyaita atmanyeva vishamyayit. Krishna says, wherever the mind goes, yato yato means wherever the heck it goes. That's kind of a loose translation, but that's what it means. It means wherever the mind may go. Wherever the heck the mind may go, because it's fickle. Chanchal means fickle. Manas chanchalam astir. Astir means unsteady. Wherever the mind may go, because it's unsteady, because it's fickle. Tatastato niyamyata. From wherever that is, one should just bring it back. Under the control of the self, or one should bring it back to Krishna. That's the practice. That's yoga practice, but the mind will wander, you bring it back. The mind will wander, you bring it back. The mind will wander, you bring it back. And without practice, it just wanders and wanders and wanders and wanders and wanders. And even people celebrate how the mind is wandering, how wonderful it is for the mind to wander. But in yoga practice, it's the opposite. How good it is for the intelligence to take control of the mind and to fix the mind on one point. And what is that one point? Is it just, the light at the center of the fan? Is it a candle? But that point is ultimately the supreme. the absolute, like Krishna. And again, there's no difference between Krishna, the absolute, and Krishna, the sound. The practice is very simple. Wherever the mind goes, you go on chanting Hare Krishna attentively. Just try to hear yourself chanting sincerely. Just try to fix the mind. And we know the mind's going to go someplace else. And bring it back. And after a while, the mind starts to get the idea that I'm supposed to be here. And the vibration purifies the mind. So instead of being your enemy, instead of being that thing that wants to drag you here and there, here and there, here and there, here and there, the mind starts to become your friend. Because now it's under your control. Is that okay? We say the self within the self, does that refer to the soul or to the consciousness? There's no difference. When we say consciousness, I mean, what is this soul thing? You know, we hear about the soul, his eternal soul has gone. What is this soul thing? What do we mean when we talk about soul? I mean, we know what it means in a musical context, but what do we mean? In a spiritual context, the soul is consciousness. If there's no consciousness in the body, absolutely no consciousness, then there's no soul. Soul is gone. You have a dead body.
So
when
you say a realization of self inside the self, so realization of soul inside the body.
Mm-hmm. Realization of soul within the body, or realization that I'm the consciousness within the body. And on that platform of realization, when we talk about soul as if it were something, I don't know what. But when you think about the soul as consciousness, then there's soul in the human being, there's soul in the body of an animal, there's soul in the body of a tree, there's a soul in the body of a fish, there's a soul in the body of a bird. They all have consciousness. They're also spiritual beings in material bodies, just as we are. Their bodies may be different, their bodies may be limited in different ways. But there's a difference between a living bird and a dead bird, and every child who's ever seen a bird die knows that there's a difference. But what is the difference? The one has consciousness and the other consciousness is gone. When we say consciousness or when we say soul, the Sanskrit is atma. When we say consciousness is the symptom of the soul, but consciousness is also not different from the soul.
Thank you.